Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Please welcome to the show this evening, John G. Kruth.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
For those of us who have experienced unexplained situations that we have passed off as hauntings, apparitions, telepathy, clairvoyance, premonitions, dreams of the future, magical influence, etc., we belong in a special group. Yes, we do. We have experienced what my guest this evening, John G. Kruth, would call exceptional experiences or exceptional phenomena. Exceptional experiences are also called supernatural, extrasensory, magical, paranormal, or spiritual. They can occur unexpectedly and without obvious causes. And to add to that, they can also be triggered by practices such as the use of a Ouija board, automatic writing, or meditation, and can occur after contacts with healers, clairvoyance, or participation in spiritual events or religious groups. Let's turn our focus now to John G. Kruth. John is the executive director of the Rhine Research Center in North Carolina and the founder and education director of the Rhine Education Center, also residing in North Carolina. His 20 years of professional technology experience and 10 plus years as a professional researcher provide a unique insight into the integration of technology and parapsychological research, where his research includes explorations into subtle energies of the body, including psychic healing, the energy behind psychokinesis, poltergeist activity, and other unconscious effects on electronic devices and measurements of biophotons, otherwise known as ultraviolet light, from energy healers. We had a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and put on that thinking cap, because we're going to go on a bit of a journey. And indeed, if you are what he calls an exceptional experiencer, you will want to take note of all the different illustrations we talk about in this show tonight. Please welcome my guest, John G. Kruth. Well, good evening, John, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Oh, this is going to be interesting. John and I were talking just before we started rolling here, and I am telling you, he is like a blessing to my life, because most of you know that I am a citizen researcher and that I've had a number of experiences ever since age three, four, 5 years old, and been trying to figure them out along the way. But John might be able to answer a few questions today that I've been searching for a long time, and it involves actually different types of phenomena, but not just phenomena. It's experiencing, how would you say it, John? You said it before, exceptional experiences.
Exceptional experiences is how we usually explain. People are having different sorts of experiences that they think are not so common. and that other people don't have as often. But what we find actually is they're much more common than people actually realize. It's a matter of whether you pay attention to them or not.
Yeah, and we're going to delve into that and you know, head first. So this is why I'm really excited for this guest today. John, though, before we get started, as always, I always ask people where this interest began for you, or if you had your own experiences at a younger age. I ask people to go back as far as they can, because you'd be surprised that some people don't always have experiences or find their gifts at a young age. They actually find them at an awakening, we might call it, or a knowing at an older age. So go back, John, and kind of give us a feel for where this interest in this field or yourself started.
Well, that's a question that's a long story, because I grew up in a family where things like ESP and healing and things was very natural. I grew up learning this when I was probably about, I'm not exaggerating, 3 or 4 years old. I was learning hypnosis and meditation from my mom. We did guided meditations together. And we did, as I said, healing was a part of my family. My mom did healing, her mother, and it went on back. It was kind of a cultural healing phenomena. And we all learned it when we were kids, all my brothers and sisters and I. And as I started to, you know, go into Little League and do different things at school, and I was doing meditations, and people would ask me, what was I doing? I explained it to them, and it confused them. They didn't understand. And sometimes it scared them, mm-hmm. to the point that I lost friends, and I didn't understand why mm-hmm. I was losing friends. Mm-hmm. So I started trying to understand why they didn't have the same experiences, and why it scared them, because it was so natural for us. Mm-hmm. Well, as I started to question, how can I explain this to them? I started to wonder, well, maybe my dad was an engineer. Mm-hmm. I started to wonder, maybe if I took a scientific approach to it, I might be able to find a way to explain it to people who don't really understand it at all. So that led me to start looking into scientific ways to explore these phenomena. So you say, when was the earliest experience? I can't even remember, because it was all my life and many different types of experiences.
That's interesting, because, you know, back in my day, we wouldn't even touch this stuff with a 10-foot pole. I mean, it's like, I was brought up very religious, very spiritual. Everything was either angels or demons, that kind of thing. And when I started having my visions, at the age of, it was pretty much 4 or 5 years old, and I would see this stuff play out on TV, and this came from my dreams, by the way. I dreamed something, and then I'd see it on TV the next day. I thought at one point in time, because it was happening so much, that I was actually causing those events, so I didn't even want to watch TV anymore, because I was afraid that I would cause something, or it had already been caused, but because of something I dreamt. But I never really shared that with anyone, because they always said back in the day, or at least my time, it's all in your head. It's anxiety. You're nervous about this. You're a worry wart. And these things were warnings, and they were coming out and playing out accurately right in front of my own eyes. So I find that interesting that your family was so open to this sort these healings or whatever, meditation or whatever, because I don't think a lot of families, at least from what I know, would ever have engaged that young. Interesting. So
yeah, I was in a religious family as well. I mean, we went to church all the time, and, you know, I went through all confirmation, went through the whole thing. But this was not something that was contrary to that at all. And within my family, we understood that, yes, there's both aspects of it, and you can combine them. The idea of these, what we're calling exceptional experiences and religious phenomena, we see them. We see these sorts of things in the Bible. We can examine them in a similar way. It's a matter of what's the source and what's the intention behind it. And that's another thing that I was always discussed with my parents, was, I want to do the right thing ethically. They didn't talk about it in terms of ethics because I was a little kid, right? But they talked about doing the right thing and having the right intention when you're doing these sorts of things, when you're doing healings, mm-hmm. when you're trying to get information or looking to see what's going to happen out in the world. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it the right way, it's not going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. I can only begin to imagine what your childhood must have looked like. When you're going through high school, or in your, you know, as you're aging and stuff, did you ever engage, or I don't want to use the word practice, but did you ever practice or engage in some of these things that you grew to learn how to do through your family with some of your classmates or friends experimentally? Or tell us a little bit about what that was like for you in those younger years.
So, well, there are six kids in my family, so we all talked to each other. And we relied on each other because we knew we couldn't talk to other people because it's freaked them out. Right. So we would talk to each other quite a bit. But it was such a natural part of growing up. It was such a natural part of how I live my life and the way I experience the world that it wasn't unusual to me.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, it was not something where I'd be in, you know, when I'd be in class and I needed to get information, I didn't know what the answers were. Mm-hmm. I just look and try to find them, and I either get it or I don't. You know, I trusted my intuition. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, the key for me is that I learned to trust my intuition at an early age. And so as I got older, I continued to trust my intuition, and sometimes it was very beneficial. You know, it helped out a lot. Now, I'm not sure what you're asking in terms of engaging with classmates, but, you know, I never set up like little seance groups and, you know, we never had any, you know, went out in the woods and burned some bonfire. Well, we did that, but it wasn't for that reason.
I know. Yeah, we were a little bit more mischievous back then in those days. Right. That's exactly where I was going with it. But, you know, I understood the fact that when people got a little freaked out by this sort of thing, or you might have had a knowing that they weren't necessarily grasping onto. I understand the aspect of knowing because I started to recognize that in myself as I turned 17, 18, 19. But I also went through hypnosis to help me with my anxiety. And I am now looking back. Now I've been regressed and to figure out where this extraterrestrial / whatever it was handprint showed up on my body. So I went through regression, which was very easy for me because I had already been hypnotized when I was very young. And so I knew what that was all about and I know how that felt. But I'm trying to figure out if that has anything else to do with maybe some of the experiences I have to this day. But that's another time. And so it does freak people out. They don't quite understand why you have this knowing or why you're here and they're here. And then there's this, you don't connect and all that sort of thing. So, all right. So now you're moving on with this. Did you go to school? Did you know offhand when you went to college what you wanted to do, or did that just kind of fall into your lap?
So it's really funny because it was probably when I was an early teenager that I decided, hey, I want to try to study sciencey things mm-hmm. to understand this. But, you know, when I ended up going to the university, there's no place to study parapsychology.
Right.
There were no avenues for that.
Right.
I ended up studying philosophy. Well, I started in physics and psychology and eventually went to philosophy and essentially was learning philosophy because I wanted to learn how to write and express the information that I was learning in a very structured way. Later, I studied computer science because, mm-hmm. well, everybody was learning computers around the early 90s. And then I went back to school and studied psychology research and analysis techniques.
Oh, cool.
It was all with the drive towards eventually getting into the field of study, the scientific study of these exceptional experiences.
Mm-hmm.
But I got sidetracked because life happens along the way, right? Mm-hmm. But it came back to it.
Correct.
And that's where it led me. And it happened that as I finished my studies in research and analysis, I'm in Durham, North Carolina. The oldest parapsychology research institute in the country is in Durham. It's the Rhine Research Center. And so I went there and talked to the people there and told them what I was doing. And so it just seemed to be the right fit at the right time.
How interesting. I was just there a week ago. And I didn't stop by and say hi because I didn't know you were there. But that was that. Yeah, I was just in there. I was just there a week ago. Wow. Yeah, I know. Long story. I was being filmed in North Carolina by a filmmaker who wanted to hear my stories about where I think some of my extraterrestrial slash outer worldly experiences have come from. And now that I know this, I'm going to have to make a couple more trips out there, I think. Let's talk a little bit about, and you can call the first shot on this, some of these exceptional phenomena or types of experiences. Can you, do you have stories or do you have some illustrations? Because I know my whole life is surrounded by all this stuff. Where you can talk kind of about where what people are experiencing, why they think they're having these exceptional experiences, or just pick an avenue and we'll just kind of evolve it from there.
Well, you know, when you ask me a question like that, I start thinking about the areas that really interested me and the areas I wanted to study and why I wanted to get into this field in the first place. And there's two things that really intrigue me. One is the connections between people. Mm-hmm. The way that we can be connected from a distance and know things about, you know, if you have a mother and a child, the connections they have are unbelievably strong. Mm-hmm. They know things about each other from a distance and they have feelings that they share. Now, we can say, well, you know, that's just, you know, they just know these things because they're living in the same environment. But the question is there more to it? Mm-hmm. And this is what we try to do in the lab. We try to develop studies where we can bring people into controlled environments and test and see if these connections really exist in ways that we cannot deny that they're actually occurring. So these connections were really, really interesting. And it goes beyond this telepathic type of connection that we're talking about into things like connections with the world, objects around the world, events that are occurring in other places, which we would call clairvoyance. Getting information from a distance, or also getting information through time, precognition. This is all about our connections to the world and how we interact with the world. So these are things that really intrigued me, but it wasn't my main interest. Mm-hmm. My main interest was healing. And because this is how I grew up. I grew up in a family of healers, and I had watched people do healing work. I had practiced it when I was younger. You know, it was, as I said, natural for us in my family. And a lot of people didn't know that it was possible. And I wanted to understand, hey, can we find a way to help people to accept this and help people? That was the goal. And can we understand in a way that we can express it so that medical professionals will accept it? I needed to learn their language. This is why I went to school, to learn research and analysis techniques, so I could learn the language and the methodologies that were more likely to be accepted by scientists.
Interesting. So I'm going to throw out the, I'm going to go back to your one that we were going to start with, the telepathic one here. And I'm going to use me as your subject, I guess.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. So there is a gentleman that I dated 38 years ago. He was my boyfriend from the Netherlands. I live in the United States. He came to study a program. I met him. We hooked up, and we decided, because of our cultural differences, or at least he didn't want to move to the U.S. and I didn't want to. I would not have fit in very well in the Netherlands because I didn't know the language and things were different back then. We broke up, but we have stayed in touch for 38 years. And what's interesting about this situation is that when I knew him back then, I could tell when the phone was going to ring and it'd be him. I could tell when he was going to write me a letter. I could sense him in various ways. I just knew all of that. And sure enough, lo and behold, you know, he'd be writing, calling, and the whole 10 yards. Fast forward now, 38 years later, sure, we don't have a particular pattern that we follow. We were at one time only corresponding twice a year, but I saw him for the first time this past May of 2023, my husband and I went over and had a trip, and we stopped by for the first time in 35 years to see each other face to face. And we both went into a situation that was completely unexpected. People would say, oh, you reopened scars and wounds and old feelings came out and now you're confused and all this sort of thing. But no, for me, it was more than that. I could tell from this past May up until January, I could sense him so strongly that I had a method and a way of knowing when I was right on target, which was he would look at my website, but I would never share this with him because this is the way I tracked him. He would look at my website and I could kind of tell that he was struggling with the same issues that I was struggling with here, but I could sense him going through all of this. And it really drove us crazy, both of us, up until this past January. Things have calmed down a little bit now. We're both happily married. But whatever that was, I am still very much in tune with a knowing of him from 4,000 miles away. Now, I blame it on being very telepathic. I am telepathic in other ways, by the way. But for some reason, he and I have some connection that I cannot explain. Any ideas as to where that might all come from, John?
Well, you know, it's what you describe, and you're describing something from many, many miles away. And, you know, I had a long distance relationship that, with my wife who was living in Romania at the time, and, you know, talking 10,000 kilometers from each other. And we had these strong connections, but I don't think it has so much to do with the distance because people have these same feelings and they're down the street from each other. You know, I have a friend who's around the corner, and I know how she's feeling as well, because we just know each other so well. We have these strong connections, and these are the types of feelings and these connections that we can have with other people that a lot of times we ignore it or we write it off as coincidence.
Right.
You know, we just say, oh, well, you know, that's I was thinking of something, but we were probably watching the same thing on TV or something like this. We just kind of push it away. But there's ways to explore it in a very controlled environment to determine if it's something that's real. And this is what, at the Rhine, it started back at Duke University back in the 1930s, where they started with those ESP cards, you know, with the circles and the wavy lines and the square. That all started at Duke University with the Rhine research, with J.B. Rhine back in the 1930s. And he was trying to find ways to determine, is this a real phenomenon that we can study? Well, for almost 90 years now, we have studied this same phenomena, and we have lots and lots of evidence that it happens. What we're trying to understand now is, how does it happen? Mm-hmm. What makes it so that some people will experience it more than other people? Mm-hmm. What are the different factors that are involved, the environmental conditions, personality types that are more likely to have this happen?
Interesting. Have you ever, you know, for me, going through the process of learning about myself and these, we call them gifts, abilities, knowing, and whatever. One of the questions that had come up, or at least I ran across a long time ago, was I think they call it a pineal gland or something like up here somewhere. And I haven't really delved into the research of that 100%, but on occasion, once in a while, things will come up and they'll say, oh, the reason why you're such a beacon to whatever, you know, and you're attracting all of this different energy to you is because of your pineal gland. And the fact that, I don't know if they said that it's calcite, calcium, mineral type things depositing or collecting or whatever, which, but I also have to preface this also with the fact that for the longest time, I believed that a lot of the trauma that I went through in my younger years and as I, you know, and all that contributed to my brain rewiring itself in a way of doing something where all of a sudden my knowing and my ability to be able to be more psychic or just know things that people didn't know was expanding. Have you guys ever studied anything about this pineal gland at all?
So the pineal gland is something that Edgar Cayce spoke about it quite a bit. And it's actually towards the center of the brain. It's, you know, there's a spot in the center of the brain where this is. We don't know that it's related to psi in any way, whether it's related to ESP. I have heard people talk about the calcification of the pineal gland, and that was something Edgar Cayce spoke about. But in terms of actual scientific evidence to support it, some biology, or there's nothing that we found that really connects the two. There has been some research that's been done to see if, well, can we see any activity in that part of the brain whenever people are having psi phenomena, but nothing's been really formalized too much. Finding the connection between biological aspects of our body and these experiences, that's a really interesting topic, and that will help to give us more information about how it works, mm-hmm. and perhaps why certain people have these experiences and others don't.
Mm-hmm.
One of the studies I'm working on, that I was just finished working on actually, is related to that, looking at physiological correlates mm-hmm. to different sorts of activity within the body that indicate healing is occurring. So these are definitely areas we follow, but the pineal gland in and of itself, we haven't found that direct connection that Edgar Cayce spoke about so clearly.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And you bring up another one here that I have given credit to other things, and you talk about healing, self-healing aspects. Now, in my case, I shouldn't be here right now. I had COVID for 8 months. I had every symptom that they described down to a T, including losing half of my hair. So I'm very grateful that it grew back. But the thing is, I was so sick, I nearly died twice. I passed out once. And I believe that something was out there. We did a lot of praying, my husband and I, every mm-hmm. single night, to try to give me the strength to turn around. But there were times it was pretty bad and almost didn't make it. And now to this day, when I look back, I'm not sure. You know, a lot of people say, well, I give credit to God. I give credit to my higher powers. I give credit to something else. And I don't know. It wasn't just that. I had cancer. I had an experience mm-hmm. in Las Vegas. I was there to, this is where I write my books. I was on the 60th floor of a very top-notch hotel. And I looked out the window one night and I said, gee, and I was there by myself because that's what I, you know, it's easier for me to work. But I looked out the window and I said, gee, maybe I will see a UFO flying by tonight or something crazy like that. Well, within 15 minutes after I said that, my room started to act up. Lights were flickering. Mechanics were not working. Nothing electrical was turning on anymore. And I found myself blacking out. And then waking up the next day feeling incredibly refreshed, like something had cleansed me. And went home 2 months later, they discovered cancer in me. But the doctor said that I was a miracle that they discovered that. Had a psychic over to my house because I was having a lot of poltergeist activity in my home that was very noticed. And she brought up this thing about, you know, a couple of years ago, you were in a hotel room and you had a visitation by something extraterrestrial that was there to clean your blood. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So you see, and who do I give credit to? God? Do I give credit to myself? When the doctor said, you're a miracle, you're a miracle, I scoffed at him. And then he basically put his face in right in 2 inches from mine and said, you're going to have to listen one more time here. You know, you're a miracle. So I'm going to throw this back at you, John. because that these things lead people into confusion. They don't know where the healing might be coming from. They don't know if it's within themselves. They don't know if they should thank God or something outer worldly for helping to save them. And my list continues with being saved and healed. But now I'm going to have you take it from there.
So it's interesting you should ask me this, because I'm teaching a course right now on energy healing and psychokinesis. And my next class that I'm going to be teaching this week is all about the different methods that people approach healing from. Everything from Reiki to healing touch to therapeutic touch to there's Qigong. All of these have different mechanisms and different ways that they approach healing. There's, when you're talking to healers, they'll often talk about themselves as if they are providing energies or providing something to another person, sending some healing activity or healing energies to another person. In those cases, sometimes the healers feel like they are the agent of healing and sending it. At other times, some healers look at it as if they are a channel. Mm-hmm. And that there's an outside entity or outside agent, whether it be God, whether it be, you know, the Pleiades or whatever it might be, that is coming through them and directing the healing. You know, a lot of people talk about the Virgin Mary sending healing energies through them and bringing that to another person. So this is just another channel where they, or another way of exploring the same phenomena. There are other people who believe that all healing is self-healing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a man named Bill Bankston who has done some amazing work in healing recently, looking at mice and using energy healing on mice. And actually, it sounds crazy, but curing cancer in mice, and not only curing it, but then the mice cannot be infected with cancer. And this is very, very hard science that he's doing with this. Using energy healing, or using an energy cure is what he would call it. But he says there's no energy involved.
Hmm.
It's actually people or mice are healing themselves. And all he's doing is providing the environment to allow it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So by presenting some information to the individual who is the target of the healing, giving them some information that allows them to be comfortable with having the healing happen themselves. Health is the natural and perfect state of a human being. When people come to realize that, he offers whatever they need to reach that state to allow the healing to occur.
Mm-hmm.
So these are different ways that you can look at healing. Now, do you relate it to somebody else? You can. From my perspective, if the healing happens, I'm happy. I don't care where it's coming from. I'm just happy that it's happening. I'm happy that it's helping people, and I hope that it continues. So be grateful for what's occurring. That's what I would say. Just be grateful.
So, John, you were talking a moment ago about self-healing. I'm going to have you take it from there again.
Self-healing is, many people will say that all healing is self-healing. And there are different ways to explore that phenomenon. You know, if you have a healer who's trying to treat someone, are they providing the healing energy for another person, or are they providing an environment for the healing to occur?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's all self-healing, there are people who oftentimes say that what they're sending is actually information to make another person comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get comfortable with it, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It doesn't matter if the healing is coming from an outside source, whether it's coming from another person or it's coming from yourself. Be grateful that mm-hmm. the healing's occurring. From my perspective, it's a good thing when healing occurs. It's a natural state. Mm-hmm. A healthy state is a natural state for a human being.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then there's situations where people might bring up, and I'm going to bring up this example, when I had COVID, death COVID is what I called it, for 8 months, and it was miserable. One of the things that I can demonstrate to you is that right here, I had COVID pneumonia. And when you have COVID pneumonia, you need a spirometer, which is a device where you breathe in, breathe out, and it helps to suck out, I call it like dandruff particles, but it's particles that collect together to build a bridge that basically that's why people suffer and they can't breathe very well. And in order to get that out, you have to suck that out. On the other side of me, I had regular pneumonia. And with this, antibiotics treated that, but antibiotics could not treat this. And so a handprint at some point showed up on my body. This was months later, but it showed up. And it was right over here, like this. But the hand was upside down, fingers were elongated. Then there was this one that was crooked. It was obvious that it wasn't my hand. It wasn't my husband's hand. It stayed on my body for 3 hours, and it just vanished. It didn't just gradually vanish. It just disappeared. It went bye-bye. And interestingly enough, it was right over here on top of my where my COVID pneumonia was, which they told me would take months and months for that to ever, if it would ever clear up. And so to this day, if you did a x-ray of me, I guarantee you there's nothing there anymore. It's just not there anymore. Whatever's in there is gone. And so was that a coincidence? Why was the handprint here? Who put the handprint on me? And then how to explain this further is that for about a year and a half, I kept asking psychics and who put that handprint on my body? I need to know. And I had all kinds of, you know, people's theories. I had two of them, though, that claimed it was something of an outerworldly or alien nature. And then I had a dream. And it was a humanoid, and it looked like a human from the backside. But when it turned around, it had big mantis eyes, and it had a black COVID mask over its face. And it wasn't enough to hide whatever it was, because I woke up in a tremendous sweat. My heart was beating out of my chest. Never had a dream like that before. Never saw anything on TV like that. Never, nothing just came out of the blue, because I kept saying, somebody please tell me who put that on my body, okay? And so anyway, long story short, I talked with one gentleman who, psychic, and he said, let's break this down. He said, black COVID mask? I said, yes. Okay, let's represent that. Let's associate that with COVID. Okay, I said, okay, that makes sense. Big eyes? I said, yeah, look kind of like a mantis. He says, mantis beings are healers. They're not there to hurt you. They're there to heal you. And I said, well, I'll be. And so out of all the theories and out of everything, I'm not sure if that was a self-healing aspect or if that was really, truly a mantis being that just finally answered my request to figure out how that got there. It never did. It never showed its hands or paws or whatever it has, you know, in that dream. But there was enough information in that dream to be brought back at least to a certain point of, if you believe in something outerworldly and these are the experiences that you're having, then I don't know how to associate that with either self-healing or something else healed you. What are your thoughts about that?
When we have experiences, and you know, experiences, similar types of experiences, people do have encounter type of experiences in many different areas. And specifically related to healing, some people have had encounter experiences related to that as well. What I look at as a researcher, as a scientist, is what actually happened. We have experiences as well. We have to consider that as part of our research when we're trying to study a phenomena. I also look at what happened. And what you're describing is that there was a mark on your chest.
Yeah.
For you, it looked like it was a handprint, but there was a mark there. And that mark was in an area where you had had some trauma, and it kind of resolved itself. And you said the healing kind of occurred after that mark went away. Is that what you're saying?
Let's see. So the mark, when I had the mark showed up on June 27th, 2020. And then I went into this big thing of trying to figure out who put it there, why it was there, the whole 10 yards. And it actually was months. But keep in mind, I still had COVID pneumonia regardless. Wow. And so, but it was months later. It was like a year and a half later because I was on my mission to figure out who put that thing on my body. And so it was months later. But then finally, it's like the universe responded and I had this unusual dream. And I've never had it before or since. But yeah. And then it's just like everything is I'm fine. You know, I don't know.
So you were looking for answers and your dreams gave you an answer.
Yes, correct.
This is the way we are. This is a human phenomena, right? When we're trying to understand something, trying to explore it, a lot of times our thoughts will come out in our dreams. Mm-hmm. And so whether it was an external being or not, again, this is an opportunity to be grateful that the healing occurred.
Right.
Regardless of the source, we don't have any firm evidence of any sort of mantis beings. We don't have any firm evidence of any sort of interactions mm-hmm. between alien life forms and humans, at least nothing that's public.
Yeah.
I can't speak beyond that, right? I do know people who have had encounter experiences, and I try to explore what was their encounter experiences like. Mm-hmm. Encounter experiences that have been tremendously healing. There's a man that I know named Chris Bledsoe, who has had a lot of light phenomena around him. And you'll probably hear of him. If you haven't heard of him yet, you'll hear of him soon, because he had a spontaneous healing as a result of some of his encounters. Now, I know him personally, and he's a very, very down to earth type of person in having these encounters. And he doesn't usually speak about alien encounters, mm-hmm. but he does talk about encounters with these light beings.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might describe them as aliens. Mm-hmm. Other people might not, but the phenomena occurs. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's interesting to understand. How does this healing happen? Mm-hmm. Now, you could have healed. It could have been self-healing because your body was healing itself.
Right.
The fact that it manifested in a way that you saw a mark on your chest, mm-hmm. the fact that you had this dream, gave you a sense of how you thought. You understand it and how it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a research perspective, it's harder for me to say, yes, that's what happened.
Talk about this electronic type of phenomenon or their experiences regarding electronics. Take it from there.
So when I was talking to you earlier, I told you the things that interested me most were the connections between people mm-hmm. and healing. These are two things that really, really grabbed my attention and I really wanted to study when I got into parapsychology.
Mm-hmm.
After I was in the field for a brief period of time, two people walked into my lab at the Rhine, and they were demonstrating psychokinetic activity, mind-matter interaction. They were having impacts, one of them on physical objects, what we call macro PK, things you could see, mm-hmm. wheels inside of jars that we were controlling very well. Another was affecting electronic devices very strongly, consistently. You never find this. In a research setting, we never find consistency. It's very, very rare. I had two walk in within a year, and I felt I needed to start studying this because it would have been a disservice to the field if I wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to look into psychokinesis and mind-matter interaction and trying to understand people talk about this energy that they feel around them when they're having these impacts.
Yeah.
I wanted to know, what is this energy? Can we learn more about it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I came from a background of studying software development. I've worked in a computer lab for a long time. When you work in a computer lab, pretty much anybody will tell you, there's some people when they walk in the room, everything breaks.
Yes, I know.
And there's other people who walk in and everything seems to work.
Yeah.
And the ones who, when things seem to work, they're usually the developers.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that, when everything breaks, those are usually the testers.
Yes, that's right.
But my question, so I had experienced that, we had lots of stories about this, but my question was, is this a real phenomenon? Can we find a way to demonstrate this in a more controlled environment? So I designed a study where I was trying to determine what sort of effect emotions and attitudes had on computer networks. Mm-hmm. And I set up a controlled study where I had a network running in a room, didn't tell anybody it was there. And I was counting the number of errors on the network while I had people in the room trying to complete tasks that were designed to induce anxiety. I found as people became more anxious, mm-hmm. that as their emotions got stronger, mm-hmm. as they had a stronger impact, had a stronger impact on them, I was seeing more impact, more errors mm-hmm. on this network that they didn't even know was in the same room. Mm-hmm. So it was an unconscious PK activity that was going on that seemed to be related to emotions. Mm-hmm. Well, shortly after this, I got a phone call from a medical doctor at the Rhine, and the doctor was saying, well, I have a patient. His mother brought him in because they think he's sick. There's something wrong with him. He has all this effect on electronic devices. He's breaking telephones, the TV set, and he went through this whole list of different things that were problematic in the house. And the doctor said, I did a physical. He's a normal kid. There's nothing unusual about him. So I didn't know what to do. He called us because he knew that we had studied these sorts of phenomena. So I did an investigation in this case of what we called electronic poltergeist phenomena. Okay. You know, back in the 1970s and 80s and before, you know, all of our interactions with poltergeists were related to objects flying around, like, you know, things that would move across the room, pictures falling off the wall, statue, furniture flipping over. But in the 21st century, we're dealing with a whole different set of variables here. We have electronic devices like this so close to us all the time that if we're going to see any sort of unconscious PK activity, it's more likely to show up in electronic devices. Mm-hmm. And so I investigated this and found that, yes, there we did a visit to his home, talked to his family, and found that, yes, it did seem that there were some things happening. Like, for example, anytime he had a telephone in his hand, the connection would be broken. It would start to get feedback on it. It got very, very, there's a lot more information about this on our YouTube channel where I do a talk on this. But there was always so much interference that his mom couldn't talk to him from on a cell phone anymore. Mm-hmm. He couldn't own a cell phone. And, he, you know, this is a teenage kid who couldn't have a cell phone. That wasn't a good situation for him. Mm-hmm. So these sorts of things happen quite often. Their question was, though, how can we make it stop?
Yeah.
Can we find ways to calm it down?
Yeah.
And so I introduced a couple of solutions for them to try to help them along the path. And one of the things I taught them, just some normal relaxation and breathing exercises. Mm-hmm. I led them through a guided meditation together to help them to learn how to relax their bodies and their minds a bit. Mm-hmm. You're doing breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things I asked him to do, I told him he was aware these things were occurring. And when it happened, I said, stop as soon as it occurs and think, what was I just thinking about?
Mm-hmm.
And then think, what was I the minute before?
Mm-hmm.
I wanted him to get used to recognizing the trigger,
mm-hmm.
the device that was causing this thing to happen, because it seemed to be an unconscious PK reaction that was related to when he was getting anxious.
Mm-hmm.
Within a week and a half, I spoke to his grandmother. She said almost everything had stopped.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing these breathing exercises. He loved it. He was really enjoying it. He liked the fact that he could control this and it wasn't overwhelming his life.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, a couple weeks later, they had another disruption in their family structure, brought back all that anxiety. All of these things started happening again. In addition, they were getting loud noises, really loud banging noises.
Mm-hmm.
That scared them so much. I talked to his grandmother. I said, have him use the same breathing exercises.
Mm-hmm.
He did. It helped him not only through the family disruption, but also helped some of the phenomena to go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It went away and didn't come back. Now, this is 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I spoke to his family just a couple weeks ago and found out that he works in meteorology with computers all around him. No problem at all with them anymore. Mm-hmm. He's a very technologically focused now, and he's very, very comfortable around technology. So mm-hmm. there's ways to overcome these sorts of disruptions that you might experience the different sorts of when you have all sorts of light bulbs blowing out around you, or mm-hmm. when you have your phone acting up or your computer, take a break. Chill. Do some breathing exercise. Maybe get a cup of coffee. Take a walk. Do something to bring your level down a bit. Mm-hmm. Allow yourself to calm to a point where you feel more comfortable again, and then try it again later. And, you know, we oftentimes, it's one of the things when we do surveys of people and they've had different experiences, people who report having PK experiences mm-hmm. often say they can't wear watches. Mm-hmm. Now, I could carry a pocket watch. Mm-hmm. I was fine with that, but I couldn't wear one on my wrist. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I found more recently is that my phone battery at certain times drains like crazy.
Right. Right.
And it's just all of a sudden it'll go from like 80% down to 15 in no time.
Right.
And when that starts, it happens so often that at first I thought it was something on my phone and I, you know, did different, but it continued to happen. Mm-hmm. I take it now. That's a signal to me, like the canary in the coal mine. For yeah. me, that's my signal that there's something going on. I better pay attention because there's something irritating me or bothering me, you know? So I use it as a signal. So these sorts of things, and I'm not the only one who describes these sorts of phenomena. There are other people who have similar ones as well. But the idea of a clock face turning,
yep.
that sounds like a mind over matter, a PK, psychokinetic type of activity. I've never seen that. First of all, I've never seen that specific type of phenomena. And I've never seen it that someone could do that sort of thing purposely mm-hmm. and repeatedly.
Well, and try doing it from 1,500 miles away.
Distance to me does not matter.
Doesn't matter? Yeah.
No. I've had effects that were occurring from, I had one man I was working with in my lab to see if he could affect a random number generator. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we were watching to see, it's like a coin flipper, ones and zeros, right? Mm-hmm. And normally it would have an equal number of ones and zeros because it's random,
yep.
right? It would just have a random number. But he was trying to affect it to have a lot more ones come up in yeah. a period of time. He was in Georgia. I was in North Carolina. We were doing it over the internet like this.
Yeah.
And he did it consistently. Mm-hmm. At that point, I said, distance doesn't matter. Not at all. I don't care if you're across the room, if you're across the hallway, or if you're, you know, 500 miles away. It's mm-hmm. still going to be the same effect. But having the effect of being able to do something consistently, that's the type of phenomena we look for in our lab, because mm-hmm. that gives us the opportunity to explore, hey, what's making this happen?
Mm-hmm.
Because not everybody can do this consistently. Mm-hmm. Can we measure any sort of energy around someone? Mm-hmm. You know, now, when you have these experiences, do you feel like there's some sort of energy exchange going on, or do you feel like you're some sort of force that you're exerting?
So I don't know. I am a beacon, or what they call a beacon. I do attract energies. I do feel differences in rooms. I can tell when there's something wretched or sick or whatever, or heavy in a room. I am telepathic. Things seem to talk to me, direct me. Don't know if that's my own intuition. Don't know if that's something else.
Right.
But I'm a study in and of myself. So
when you're talking about the clock in particular, mm-hmm. you gave it an exceptional amount of focus, mm-hmm. an exceptional amount of attention.
Yep, I did.
And sometimes that directs our activity whenever you might have a strong focus in a certain area. Mm-hmm. Now, other people, it can affect, some people are very directed with their focus.
Mm-hmm.
Other people are more scattered with it, and it can affect different electronics, like light bulbs over there or your computer over there. It can affect different things in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
But when you were specifically focused, I can understand why that might have had that impact. Mm-hmm. So what I was asking specifically about, though, was, you know, you talk about being able to feel these, and well, first of all, you're describing the way you're describing things, hearing these voices being mm-hmm. directed. Mm-hmm. This is what we usually attribute to mediumship.
Mm-hmm.
Communication with spirits.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people who are mediums will describe the same sort of phenomena. Mm-hmm. Not all mediums are doing the same sort of psychic phenomena that you're talking about, or having effects on objects around them either.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about feeling this energy when you go in a room, some people discuss it's almost like it's an electrical.
Yes, I've had that.
It's kind of tingles like mm-hmm. electricity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what we do when we have people doing these sorts of phenomena, we measure to see, look at their electrical field, see if there's any variance in their electrical field. We use traditional engineering type of equipment or physics equipment to measure electrical fields.
Mm-hmm.
When you measure the electrical, all of our bodies, we all have electrical fields, right? Our nervous system works by electricity, right? All of our muscles move through electric, our brains work using electric signals. But you can only measure them really, really close to the body.
Mm-hmm.
If you start to move further away from the body, you can't even detect them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So when we try to measure, is there a change in electrical field around a person?
Mm-hmm.
Not really finding a change in an electrical field.
Mm-hmm.
But some people describe, especially healers, talk about like a magnetic pull.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be working in a certain, they'll say, oh, I feel like I'm being drawn to this area, or I'm being pushed away.
Right.
Like it's a magnet that's either the poles are opposing or mm-hmm. attracting each other. So we look at magnetic fields around people.
Mm-hmm.
And we start to say, well, can we measure the magnetic field? Anywhere there's an electrical field, our bodies are electric, there's a magnetic field. This is physics.
Mm-hmm.
But again, those magnetic fields that are in our bodies are very, very close to our bodies. Mm-hmm. You can't measure them when you start to get further away
mm-hmm.
because it gets drowned out by everything around us. So how could it affect an object across the room
mm-hmm.
or 1,500 miles away or whatever? How could it affect that?
Mm-hmm.
And we start wondering, well, is this really the energies that we're looking for? So we've looked for all different types of physical energies.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we've come to look at a great deal at the Rhine is light.
Mm-hmm.
And we're actually, light is a form of electromagnetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking at ultraviolet light. There is a natural, we have ultra weak photon emissions.
Mm-hmm.
This is how they talk about it in biology. There's very low levels of light that come from people.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't parapsychology. This is biology.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know where this light comes from. It's obviously a chemical reaction. They don't know why it's there.
Mm-hmm.
What we have at the Rhine is ultraviolet light coming from people, really low levels.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a really dark room set up with really sensitive equipment in it. And I'll bring in people who say they're healers, people
mm-hmm.
who say that they're doing martial arts, and are people who are doing a lot of meditation. They're all talking about feeling energies. Martial artists talk about chi
mm-hmm.
and moving chi around. Healers talk about moving energies.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see, hey, can we detect any changes in the light when they're doing their healing or their martial arts form?
Mm-hmm.
With about 90% of the people that come in the room, I take a baseline and then I do an active session. Do your healing, do your martial arts. With about 90%, I get no change.
Mm-hmm.
But with about 10% of the people who come in, I start seeing changes in the light measurements.
Mm-hmm.
I can measure an individual photon of ultraviolet light in my lab. One photon. It's like no light at all. When the room's empty, there's about 3 to 5 photons of light I measure.
Mm-hmm.
When a person's in there, that jumps up to about 20 photons of light.
Mm-hmm.
That shows that we're glowing. All of us are glowing just when we're sitting around.
Mm-hmm.
These healers, certain ones, these martial artists, will jump from 12 to 20 photons
mm-hmm.
all the way up to 80.
Mm-hmm.
4 times the baseline. It's a big change. But I'll see them getting into the hundreds of photons, thousands, even into a hundreds of thousands of photons a second.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need statistics to know there's something unusual going on when these people are doing their healing activities.
Mm-hmm.
So how does light
mm-hmm.
have anything to do with this energies that we're talking about? And, you know, light, it's blocked out by mm-hmm. walls. You can't travel from long distances.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps we're not talking about an energy-based system. We're not talking about healing occurring by energy or PK having an effect on your watches occurring by energy.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's an information-based system.
Mm-hmm.
Light is a carrier for information. our entire fiber optic cables, right? They all work with light. All of the entire internet is based on fiber optics. Perhaps a healer or someone who's doing PK is sending information to another person to allow that self-healing to be activated, like we were talking about earlier.
Mm-hmm.
They're providing that information. The same thing with someone who's performing PK. Perhaps they're providing information. Maybe these objects that we're interacting with aren't as, they're more alive than we think they are. Maybe they're more animate than we think they are, and that we're that people, certain people are able to interact with them and cause them to change state. This is the type of thing that we're looking at the Rhine, trying to figure out what is the energy behind energy healing. What is the energy behind PK activity?
John, tell everybody how they can find you or find the organization so they can learn a little bit more.
So it's really easy to find us. We're at Rhine.org. And we also, besides Rhine.org, we have an education center where we teach online courses for people. It's professional education in parapsychology. And that's at RhineEDU.org. Or you can find us on YouTube at Rhine Research Center or Twitter, we're at Rhine ESP. There are different ways you can find us if you look around. What I'd recommend, if you go to Rhine.org, join our mailing list. I don't splatter people with emails, but that'll give you a chance to know when we're offering courses that might interest you, when we have events, we have speakers, we have different meetings that come up. We'll just provide you with information about what's going on at the organization.
On behalf of the show, and thank you again, thank you, John, for being with us today.